Espionage with Attitude. We are the Spy Fi Guys, and this is I Spy.
Welcome to the Spy Fi Guys.
So I apologize to the universe for that.
Yeah. Wow.
Justice for Denison.
Is it though?
I laughed and then I hated myself for laughing. Hello and welcome back to the Spy-Fi Guys, where we cover spy facts, spy fiction, and everything in between. I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And we are back today with a new old-ish comedy movie called I Spy.
Yeah, so this one is based on a 1965 series, so it would have fit right into our, what was that called? What
Swingin' 60s Spy Summer?
That's the one. But we're covering it now.
Yeah, so this movie is from 2003, and boy, does it feel like it.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, and it's just incredible. We'll get through it as we go through the discussion, but it's really a product of its time. According to IMDb, it's from 2002, and I actually own it on DVD.
Do you really? How long have you had that?
Only like a year or so. There was a point where I was collecting old DVDs for reasons that are my own. And I picked this one up because I thought someday we might do it for Spy-Fi Guys.
And
I was ready. I got it for like a dollar at a library book sale. A couple of things about this cover. First is Eddie Murphy is shown holding a gun that he never holds in the actual movie. Though he does hold a variety of guns.
Okay, yeah.
A similar one. And then it also shows them on parachutes, which they never do in the movie either.
There was talk some parachute. It. Didn't they actually use parachute? We'll talk about it as we get through it.
And then on the bottom here it says, funny and incredibly fast-paced. Fast-paced isn't always a good thing, but I suppose this time it is.
Who's that attributed to, that quote?
Jeffrey Lyons, WNBC TV.
Oh, okay. All right, so shall we get into our synopses?
Plot synopsis.
Yes, so as always, we have our poetry synopses, and first is our haiku, written by me. And here the spoilers begin. Invisible plane. Two rookies cause line to snap. Roof confrontation.
All right.
Because they are on that roof for a long time.
Yeah, yes.
And then next is our limerick. Kelly comes when his prez calls for aid. And he helps his bro Alex get laid. He can talk and can sing, is unmatched in the ring, but in the end, never got his parade.
All right. Pretty good.
Thank you. And this time, we're going to do something different. Instead of reading the IMDb plot summary, I'm going to read what is written on the back of the DVD.
Ooh, okay. All right. I like
it's
it.
It's a little bit long, but just be patient. As I think
you know what?
Like
now I kind of want to see if I can, for any future ones, if I have a DVD of it, I'm going to try to dig it up and see if we can look at that.
That would be great. Okay, here we go. Superstar Eddie Murphy, the Nutty Professor, teams up with Owen Wilson, Zoolander, behind enemy lines for a hilarious action-packed thrill ride. Famke Janssen, X-Men, GoldenEye, also stars as an ultra-sexy secret agent. A super-powerful experimental spy plane is stolen by an evil arms dealer and is about to be handed over to an international terrorist. The U.S. government drafts an egotistical boxing star, Murphy, to join a suave special agent, Wilson, on a dangerous top-secret mission to get the plane back. Armed with the latest high-tech gadgets and a whole lot of attitude, this ultimate odd couple might be able to save the world if they can just get along.
They really seem to be going all in on the attitude part.
Yeah, well, I guess 2002, that was all about attitude, baby.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, really, the peak of attitude, you know, is the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers when Zordon tells Alpha to find them teenagers with attitude.
Yes, that jumps to mind, which wasn't so long ago in 2002, 2003.
No, it was. That show came out in like 1992. That was 10 years out of date already.
So Christian, which, let's say, spy fiction protagonist would you say has the most attitude? Because one jumps immediately to my mind.
Ooh, most attitude? Depends on how you define attitude.
Well, the way Zordon does.
All right, who is it? Now I'm gonna. Is it Xander Cage?
It is, in fact, Xander Cage. Well done.
I was like, for some reason, I went to the pacifier. I was like, oh, we haven't covered the pacifier, but we have covered a Vin Diesel movie. That's right. Yeah, with that's right. So much attitude. This is the same year that came out, or like a year before. Was that 2002, 2003? One of those two.
Close enough. Anyway, so shall we jump into the this movie, I Spy? I have a lot to say.
Okay, just good. All right, so we start with a snowy mountaintop. There's a chopper looking for someone, and we meet Special Agent Alex Scott of BNS, which only through looking on Wikipedia did I find out what BNS stands for. Bureau of National Security.
They say it in the movie. Did you just miss
it? I must have missed it, because I was... Maybe they say it like once, and then always, BNS, BNS, BNS. I'm like, what the hell does BNS stand for?
That's right. And there's airplane-style humor here, mm-hmm. because the text says Uzbekistan, top of a mountain range, and then when he falls down the mountain, it says bottom of a mountain range.
That was pretty good.
And they don't repeat that throughout the movie, so it was interesting that it was a one-noter.
Yeah, so Alex Scott, played by Owen Wilson here. So they're looking for Percy, who's a turncoat pilot who stole something. Well, a plane. Well,
didn't he steal the plane? The plane that's the subject of the movie?
Yeah. So we see Alex drop his cell phone and causes an avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
We see that Percy is still alive, but he's buried half in the snow and his leg is broken. They need to get out before the Russians arrive. And so Alex is telling, he wants to know what Percy did with the plate he stole. And apparently he sold it to an arms dealer named Arnold Gundars. Then we get some action and they have to get to the chopper.
And there's a lot of action. There's a bit of a joke where the pilot keeps getting hurt.
Yeah.
Again, like airplane-style humor with Wax's head on things, as I recall. Mm. But it's decent action. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So we next cut to Las Vegas.
Yeah, meet Eddie Murphy, the boxer. Eddie Murphy is still great. He's great in everything. He's great in this movie. You don't agree, Christian?
I mean, I enjoy Eddie Murphy. I don't know if I enjoy him in this film.
Ooh, hot take. I enjoy him in this film.
All right. So he is playing Kelly K.O. Robinson, who's a boxer, who's probably, who has never been KO'd.
He's very conceited. He's very full of himself.
And, has never been knocked down in his career. So he's defending his title. He even gives his opponent a free shot at him. And he, I was impressed by the speed. I'm sure some of that is helped by editing, but his dodge and then a quick hit at his other opponent and KO, done.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah. We get our titles very quick, just I Spy.
And they never explain what the deal is with I Spy. You'd think there would be some sort of a name drop. Uh-uh. It's the perfect movie for that. No?
Yep.
The only title more boring than Spy with Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah. Okay. So Robinson is getting another tattoo. He's got a bunch of hash marks for every win. And his assistant gets a call. And it's the President of the United States.
Yes, and not just any President of the United States.
George W. Bush.
A man of our generation, despised. But somewhere along the line, that changed. Not to get all political here, Christian. But the movie, I guess, was made when he was at least kind of liked.
I mean, it's post 9/11, so, he was seen as being, a good leader during that time. So he was
tolerated. Do you know when the Iraq War started?
2003, right? This was before the Iraq War.
So I'm going to check. I think it actually 9/11. Took longer than that. Iraq War 2, the sequel. Yes, it began in 2003. I thought it was later than that, actually.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. No. Yep. Otherwise, American Idiot by Green Day wouldn't have come out during my high school years.
Yeah, there you go.
President needs Kelly's help. And as a top secret mission, he makes a dick joke about being 009.5.
I kind of like that. Look, I lowered my IQ for this movie because I knew what I was going to expect.
So Agent Scott, a.k.a. Alex, has a Hugh Branch tour, and he's excited to work with Special Agent Rachel Wright. And he's got
he has a crush on her, and he thinks that she's easy.
I don't think she thinks...
Maybe not easy.
I don't think so. No. I mean,
she'll sleep with a coworker. What would you call that? Gettable?
Okay, dateable. No. I don't know. And
the movie is sexist.
The movie is very sexist, but also, He literally says she's the kind of girl to put up on a pedestal.
That's true.
So he doesn't think that she's easy, necessarily. He also has a rival agent, Carlos, played by, God, what's his name? That
boy,
guy,
he has a face. Yeah,
he's from Office Space, Gary Cole.
Okay.
You could get that to me by 3.
The CBS report guy. Obviously, we've seen this before in a million other movies, right? The cool agent, The Rock from GetSmart.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Rock again in The Other Guys.
Who else was
there? There are many. There are many. Archer.
Or Will Smith in the bird one.
Spies in Disguise. Yes.
Others have some banter. Alex gets worse gadgets than Scott's.
Yeah, I thought this was
funny. Carlos says, that was fun. I enjoyed this part. Carlos gets James Bond-style gadgets, whereas Alex gets probably what's closer to a real world, what they use.
It was like a giant camera. It looks like it's a movie camera from the 60s.
Yeah. And so he ends up stealing some of Carlos's gadgets.
Yeah, which is an interesting insight into this character. He's not such a goody two-shoes as one would indicate.
No. So Alex is watching an interview with Robinson, or at least what looks like an interview, and starts talking smack about him. And it turns out that's not an interview. It's a video call.
I like this joke. It's an old joke, but I still like that. It's because Eddie Murphy did a good job. Whatever, so I'm fanboying. I don't care.
So there's a briefing. We find out what was stolen was the Switchblade, an electrochromatic invisible stealth aircraft, which is now in the hands of Arnold Gundar's arms dealer.
That's right. And who is that?
Michael McDowell. Not Michael McDowell.
Yeah, who's a villain his whole career. If you can think of a movie where he's not a villain, I would be impressed.
No, hold on. There's got to be something. I feel like he plays Merlin in something. Hold on, I got to find this.
I'll look on his IMDb page because I have it right here. What's this movie called? Time After Time. H.G. Wells pursues Jack the Ripper to the 20th century. And Malcolm McDowell is H.G. Wells. So I guess, no, he's not. He's not Jack the Ripper. He's H.G. Wells.
Kids of the Round Table, where he plays Merlin.
Oh my goodness. Hey, Chris, you know who directed this movie I've never heard of until now called Time After Time?
Who?
Nicholas Meyer.
Actually, I have heard of this because he's talked about it when he's been on podcasts. Michael McDowell has also played King Arthur in a TV movie called Merlin and the Sword. So, yes, I knew there was a movie where he played King Arthur. Merlin. So there, not a bad guy.
Sometimes he is not a villain.
Very rarely. Although now I'm kind of curious if there's any other notable movies in his career where he'd played not a bad guy.
You know, Time After Time is on his IMDb page. Not that that's so scientific.
Yeah, let's see. Anyways, where were we?
So he gets the briefing that Malcolm McDowell has stolen the Switchblade and he's going to sell it.
General who's there wants to use Carlos, but all the players know him too well. Rachel is already embedded in Budapest, and we find out that Gundars is a big boxing fan. Kelly's next bout will be held in Budapest, and Gundars is throwing a big party, and the guest list is full of bad guys. It's all cover to sell the Switchblade.
Mm-hmm. It's a common trope. And Christian, some people didn't like that they have a civilian boxer be part of this mission. I personally did not have a problem with it.
I was fine. I mean, from a stupid movie,
which this is,
level of, I'm fine with it. From our usual standard, I'd be questioning why he was given this much intelligence about it. It's a trope we've seen. I feel like we've seen in other movies where you need someone to be part of the cover. Usually, although I feel like it's like an attractive woman, and then Bond sleeps with them in the end or something like that.
Well, what jumps to my mind, actually, is The Courier. It's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, from a more realistic... Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. That's actually an excellent point.
Thank you.
But yeah, so their only shot to get Alex in there is a cover job with Kelly. And then we see a ridiculous stretch SUV show up at the airport. It's like twice as long as a regular limo. And of course, it's an SUV, too.
Of course. That's great. And Kelly's there with his entourage. And I gotta say, his entourage is my favorite character in the movie. They're so put upon. They work so hard. He does not appreciate them.
Alex gets a frosty greeting from Kelly, and Alex's cover is that he's Kelly's assistant, and his whole entourage thinks that the secret mission is to babysit the president's mentally challenged nephew.
Yeah, they actually use the R slur, which is what you're supposed to call it, in my understanding, and they use it twice.
Ooh,
nope. Talk about dated. But I actually kind of like that, that he kept it secret. You know, the idea that Kelly is in on it is already silly, but if his entourage was in on it too.
Well, that would be too much. No, right. No.
So that checked out. I thought that was funny. But relations are strained right away between our two leads.
Yep. And so they get in the air, and there's a point where Kelly Robinson is flying the plane. Alex is trying to get him on board with a plan, but Kelly's resistant. Kelly doesn't want to put the party at 8 because he wouldn't show up to any party that would start at 8.
Yeah, he's too cool for that.
Mm-hmm. So he wants to get there 11, and Alex lures him with a gadget, with his camera contacts, where he can see whatever some, you know, the other person with the other pair is seeing.
Yeah, it's fun. It's cool. I do also like how his plane has his face everywhere.
Yeah.
He knows the purposes of branding.
Yeah. But even after showing him the cool gadgets, Kelly still wants to go to the party 11. So Alex decides, I'm going to drug the pilot to get, you know, Kelly to agree so that they don't crash. You know, apparently he knows how to fly a plane, but he actually doesn't. What happens is that the pilot just puts it on autopilot for him, and he gets the whole
he's like a kid. He gets to pretend that he's flying it, which I thought was very funny. That was a good reveal. What did you think?
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah. But of course, this doesn't work. And, you know, even after Alex, you know, revives the pilot and brings him back up, Kelly's still like, nope, I'm showing up at 11.
Yeah, getting him to agree under duress doesn't work. Thought.
Also, due to Alex's shenanigans, Kelly and his entourage get the cheapest room in the basement in the hotel to enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I don't know, Christian. What do you think about this? Okay, I know Kelly is like a dick, okay?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's not that bad. We've encountered worse. But Alex, I was hoping, would take the high road a little bit. He basically gets his revenge, and not just on Kelly, on this whole entourage, because his entourage gets blamed for it. Mm-hmm. As soon as he has the opportunity to screw him over, he does it. So it's like, come on.
I'm good with it. I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Anyway, so, look, it's Famke Janssen.
Yeah, she shows up.
She's flirting with Kelly and says, all right, let's go to my room across the street. And as they do, Kelly gets kidnapped.
Did you fall for this trick?
No.
You didn't?
No.
I did. Just because he's so flamboyant and so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so Kelly is tied up. Famke Janssen threatens to cut his dick off. And then Alex comes in and shoots the rest of the goons and then gets tackled by Famke Janssen. And Kelly gets a gun and tries to shoot Famke Janssen. And it's all a setup.
Yeah, and he didn't give any information.
No, well, he did, but gradually.
Yeah,
and not enough to really identify him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, he didn't give any information because he definitely doesn't know Alex's name.
Yeah, that's right. Because he like wasn't paying attention, which is great. So my significant other who I was watching this with had an observation at this point where she says, they're unhappy with each other, but I'm happy to watch them.
Kelly is briefed on the mission. He's pumped and ready to go. Famke Janssen is Rachel, who was embedded.
That's right. And the agents, all the other agents just love Kelly Robinson. They want his like autograph and things like that, which I thought was funny.
So Rachel's acting as the chauffeur. Alex has to plant a pen on Gundar's, which is identical to a pen that they know he carries.
That's right. And Alex is so thirsty for Rachel. It's like embarrassing to watch.
So they work the red carpet, and then Alex almost doesn't get it let in, but then Kelly's, to prove a point about putting him in the basement, I was like, no, he's not with me, and they start to take him in, and he's like, just kidding, Kelly, we go.
Again, I was hoping one of them would take the high road, but none of them ever did.
No. And, look, it's Malcolm McDowell. So I actually enjoyed, I thought Kelly actually did a good job with the pen swap in terms of how to get them to swap pens.
Yes, he did. See, he's got some spy skills.
No, I was pleasantly surprised by that. For the most part, I've just been annoyed with him. So,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I liked him.
No, he's an idiot and a jerk, and so I was annoyed with him.
But do you like how later they explained some of his skills?
They did.
Later on in the super long chase scene that goes on way too long, there's a part where he hotwires a car and he said, this is from like life growing up on the mean streets of LA or
something.
Yeah,
sure.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So he knows more than just how to talk and punch people.
Mm. But yeah, so Alex needs Kelly to make a distraction. So he gets his opponent who's going to be fighting the next day in a ring that's set up for the party. And as this is going on, Gundars is speaking to buyers. He's taking bids for the Switchblade.
That's right. And what did you think of Kelly's distraction? Where he's like, come on, everybody, let's have a slap fight. And he slaps the dragon.
That I enjoyed.
Yeah, of course.
We have Alex, who's observing, you know, some of the buyers from above. He descends Mission Impossible style. But of course, the doors open at that moment, and it's Kelly. And there's a laser net, which he trips. So he, you know, brings Kelly over. They try to ascend back up the way that Alex came, but the anchor breaks, so they have to shoot another one.
And my significant other absolutely loved this.
Really?
She was cracking up when they were spinning around and then fall.
Gundars enters, is told the alarm was set off, and he sees them ascending, sends men to the roof. They get the whole thing locked down.
Yeah. This begins a very long chase.
Oh, God, it's so long.
Very long.
They're stuck up on the roof, so they jump onto a tent, they run, they go down a funicular, which was part of the chase for some reason.
What's a funicular?
It's not quite an elevator, it goes diagonally down.
Oh, I thought that was a trolley.
No, it's a funicular.
Okay, well, this part, the part in the funicular,
yeah,
is one of my favorite parts of the movie where a guy is running up the side with a gun, and Alex just grabs a piece of, like, the roof and, like, just throws it on the guy's head.
Yep, yep. I've been on a decent amount of funiculars, I guess. There's one in Quebec that I've been on a couple of times, and they are a way of getting up a hill without, you know, having stairs or, like, a trolley that goes around. It just goes diagonally up.
Ski lift.
Yeah, although a true funicular, if I recall, works with by sort of, you know, counterbalancing. You'll have one that goes up as the other goes down.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these funiculars now just go under their own power, so they're not a counterbalance like that.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, so they escape onto a hot air balloon.
No, it's not a hot air balloon. It's like just
That's right. It's like some sort of like weather balloon spy thing.
Yeah,
but then it deflates too soon. Oh, okay, that's what I was thinking about for the parachute. Like, didn't they go up in the air for some reason? Yeah, that's right.
Yes, that's right.
It was a balloon. It deflates too soon. They land on a car carrier. This is too long of an action scene, is what my notes say.
Yeah, this is the part where Kelly says he used to transport cars.
That's right.
And another thing, he starts throwing the cars at the bad guys. This would have blown all the budget for this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Right here.
That was clever. I would say that. All right, and yeah. But this chase still isn't over. They take a car from the carrier, and then they get into a dead end. They take a scooter, go down some chairs, and my note says, this chase is like half the movie so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Unironically, yes.
And somehow they get stuck in a sewer, and they're hiding in a sewer.
That's right. And this is where we learn Kelly's deep and dark, sad personal backstory about his parents and where he came from. I said girl talk in my notes.
Yeah, and they're getting loopy from the methane in the sewers, so they both start pouring their hearts out, and they're getting closer, like, oh, me and you were the same. You know, it's basically a couple of drunk girls at, like, 2 a.m. after the bar's closed.
I like this part. It was cute.
Mm, it's fine. I'm glad. What I'm glad of is they didn't actually extend it. They have cuts. So they'll be talking at one point, and then you'll see it cut, and they montage it, so it's not the entire thing, because this movie it is not fast-paced.
You disagree with Jeffrey Lynch?
Yes.
Yeah, so it cuts it up so you get the impression they just go talking and talking and talking for hours, but you don't have to watch it yourself.
No, thank God. So, next morning, they get back to the safe house. The plane is still in Budapest, but the deal is happening today.
So their big plan is just start looking for the plane, even though it's invisible.
Yeah. Alex tells Rachel to go take a nap. They'll cover for her for a while. They'll let her know if the pen moves. Because that's how... Oh, yeah, we didn't actually say why they needed the pen. The pen is a tracking device.
Yep. Classic spy movie. There's more awkward flirting with Alex and Rachel. And Rachel is written in a way women were written in the past, where she just doesn't notice anything. is like totally oblivious.
Yeah. Now Kelly is trying to hype up Alex to go back there with Rachel. He uses the contact lens as an earpiece. This is painful.
It's very painful.
Kelly is telling Alex to sing the lyrics to the song Sexual Healing. But Alex just decides to spoken word them.
Yeah.
Like,
so my significant other loved this part also. She was cracking up. She thought it was hilarious.
No. Oh yeah. Lyrics to Sexual Healing. Somehow this works.
Yes.
She gets, you know, Rachel invites Alex into bed with her, but of course, coitus interruptus, the pen moves at this point. And I'm talking about the tracking pen.
Yeah, thank you, Christian. Well, a couple of other observations. Rachel's not wearing any pants. I don't even know what to say, so I won't say anything. But also, I like how he remembered to turn Kelly off.
Yes, that I did appreciate. So they track the pen. Gundarz is going to some Turkish baths, so they go inside. They lose the signal. Alex wants to retreat and, you know, figure out what a better plan, whereas Kelly just wants to move forward. So they keep going and keep searching, and we see, you know, men hiding guns under their towels. And they start a, you know, big action scene.
Christian, didn't they literally do this in John Wick?
No.
A bathhouse shootout in, like, a spa?
I mean, there is the Red Circle Club where there are, like, yes and no. One person in a towel in John Wick. That's in the first John Wick, actually, now I think about it.
Yeah, exactly. When he's chasing Theon Greyjoy.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's just him in the towel. Anyway, so, yeah, it's a very bloodless gunfight is what I have in my notes
here. Yeah, A-team gunfight, and then it all ends with a big explosion.
Yeah.
With a grenade.
Gas explosion. They go outside. Gundarz flees in a car. Rachel follows behind, but then her car explodes.
With no body. Convenient. I didn't fall for this.
Yeah.
Not this time.
So Alex is blaming Kelly for Rachel's death. They have a fight.
Yeah, they argue, they're at odds. And I must say, Alex is very confident taking on a professional boxer.
A boxer who's not used to defending against kicks.
Well, yeah, I guess it's interesting that Eddie Murphy, the guy who's like, breaks the rules, doesn't care about the rules, he fights by the rules.
Now,
he's used to following the rules, and Alex doesn't.
Alex got a pretty good kick in, and then the police, then Kelly just kicks him in the balls.
Mm-hmm.
Classic 2000s humor.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police arrive, and then this, I was like, whoa, all right, this is where Alex went too far.
He arrests him? That's not even a good idea. Well, you know what?
No, he tells the police, the black guy robbed me, and then they arrest him.
Yeah, you should call him a Karen. He's going to get canceled.
Oof.
But it also kind of makes sense, not the black guy part, but the arresting him part, the classic spy cliche, I work better alone.
Uh-huh.
He's just getting in my way. This is a good opportunity to get rid of him.
What
a cliche. You know they love each other.
So Alex returns to the safe house. It's been trashed. I'm now pretty sure that Rachel is not dead and is in on the whole thing.
Yeah, you figure that out?
Yeah, no. Because who else had access to the safe house other than all the other guys? Oh, yes, Rachel. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the traitor isn't going to be just a random schlub.
No. So Alex gets a call from HQ. They want to send him backup. And he's like, no, I've got this all covered.
Mm-hmm.
Now Kelly gets to his fight. His entourage has been waiting for him.
Yay.
And Alex is infiltrating Gundar's home as the fight is going on. He tries to stick a micro tracker to the car, but it's the size of a car battery, so it doesn't quite, you know, magnetize.
Like, he's falling off. This is a good joke.
Yeah. And he gets into the trunk to try to put it there, but then gets trapped there. He tries to listen in with a spy mic, but it's muffled.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Kelly is starting his fight. Alex lures the driver to the trunk, knocks him out. And then notices something weird on the top of the bridge. There are birds who are sitting on top or like landing on.
Interesting. So, oh my gosh, he's found the plane.
Yeah.
So quickly. So
the plane's been hiding there this whole time. Gundarz has been showing it to a potential buyer. And Kelly's fight starts, and a guard is watching it on TV as Alex infiltrates.
Mm-hmm.
Gundar's Asian buyers are attaching a nuclear warhead to the plane, and the target is Washington.
So I was expecting a double cross at this point.
From the Asian buyers?
Well, from somebody.
Well, we get one because Rachel is alive, called it.
Right.
And the Asian buyers enter in the activation code in the plane, but it's the wrong code.
Yeah, it starts to blow up. By the way, what did you think of the CGI with the plane?
It was fine.
Early CGI, yeah.
It's what you see on an episode of Star Trek with a cloaking device.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it looked like, yeah. but yeah, so it's going to self-destruct in 10 minutes. Alex has the code to fly it home, and Rachel tries to get him out of him. He's been captured and tied up again.
I don't remember Alex being told the code, but I guess yeah, it's implied. Well,
but it's implied because he's supposed to fly it home, so he has to have it.
Which, I don't know why he had to fly it home. Because he's had a recovery team come get it, whatever.
So Alex turns on the contact lens, which, for some reason, Kelly is still wearing.
I guess he forgot about it. I know I forgot about it. Did you forget about it?
I guess he never does take it off. We never see that.
Mm-hmm. Not so concerned about his privacy, I guess.
Yeah. So Kelly sees it, and he sees what can be seen through Alex's eyes, which is Rachel hitting Alex, and he gets thrown off and starting to dodge. You know, Rachel's blows, gets hit in the boxing match, and goes down for the first time in his career.
Yeah, this was good drama, Christian. I like this part. Oh my goodness, is he going to save his buddy? Is he going to win against this guy he's boxing? It's not so easy. He's having trouble even before Alex called him. I think so.
I don't think so. I think he was just waiting for it because he was playing with him. Okay. Kelly can hear what's happening with Alex. Decides he's going to focus, you know, even though of what's going on in his ear and his eye. Mm-hmm. And you know, real quick, KOs his opponent and then runs out of the ring.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't even collect his entourage.
Yeah. So back on the top of the bridge, Rachel says there's something that always makes a man talk, cuts off Alex's belts, and then tells the man to take off his pants. As they're trying to get his pants off, he headbutts the goons and gets free. Kelly comes to rescue him.
Not a big gunfight. Malcolm McDowell disappears, never to be seen again.
Yeah, right?
What's up with that?
Carlos arrives via parachute and knows that Rachel is a double agent. Kelly realizes that Carlos is potentially also bad.
This is a few too many double crosses. We all got very confused.
Kelly knocks out Carlos. Alex is in the plane trying to enter the right code, pulls out the self-destruct, and then throws it off the bridge. Rachel's now saying she's a double. Alex is buying this because he's a lovesick puppy, but Kelly isn't.
We all noticed, including Kelly, that she was stabbing him 10 minutes ago. And now he's on the right side.
Carlos wakes up, fights Alex, but Kelly pulls off his ponytail. This is so stupid.
Stupid.
And as they're fighting, Rachel escapes with Gundar's computer, which has access to all of Gundar's numbered accounts. Mm-hmm. What happened to Gundar's? Where'd he go?
Did he get shot? To be fair, I think he got knocked out. And just stays knocked out for the rest of the very, very long rooftop scene.
So, because of course we're not done yet, Alex and Kelly fly off in the plane, but there's a nozzle failure, so they crash in the river. And as the they crash, the nuke floats up, and they're all panicked because now we're not gonna be heroes. Oh wait, we just saved the world from a nuke. We're heroes again. Turns out it's not armed, anyways.
It's like, what is that? I would have just had them fly away if I were making the movie. Just clean it. Whatever.
And we're off to Monte Carlo, where Rachel has changed her look, dyed her hair, wearing a wig.
I'm sorry, Christian.
Yes?
So was Carlos a bad guy or not?
Who knows?
You don't know. I don't know.
Seemingly not, if Rachel was actually...
I don't think he was.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're... Yeah, again, too many twists. So we're in Monte Carlo. Rachel has got either a wig or a dye job and is blonde now. And she's trying to transfer money from the accounts, gets a message that she's being tracked. And Alex and Kelly capture her. But she taunts them by saying that she's glad that they got all their news coverage. And it turns out Carlos got the credit and a parade. And then there's some nonsense about hover gel.
Yeah, we're going to use some hover gel to make Kelly Robinson happy.
Which is not an actual thing because Alex says, all right, and just get some, jars of jelly and two parachutes.
Like on the cover of the DVD, but we never actually see it.
And with that, our movie ends.
Yes, it's directed by Betty Thomas. I assume a woman director because her name's Betty. And I thought there would be a post-credit scene, but no. I kept watching for a long time. I didn't want Christian to call me out on it.
I don't. I didn't bother because I knew there wasn't one.
All right. What a movie.
So Betty Thomas, apparently, is an actor and a director. She played Sergeant Lucy Bates on Hill Street Blues. But more prominently, like at least in terms of movies, she directed the Brady Bunch movie, Dr. Doolittle, 28 Days, which is unrelated to 28 Days Later. John Tucker Must Die. Okay.
All right.
And Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Squeakquel. Oh, goodness. Oh, she directed Howard Stern's Private Parts. Interesting.
Barely been around.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's the movie.
Yes, that's the movie.
Spy fact versus spy fiction.
All right, so now it is time for our spy fact versus fiction.
What do you have?
I have a decent amount.
I'll go first. And so what I've got is from Wikipedia, stealth aircraft.
All right.
So they're designed to avoid detection using a variety of technologies that reduce reflection emission of radar, infrared, visible light, radio frequency spectrum, and audio, collectively known as stealth technology. The F-117 Nighthawk was the first operational aircraft explicitly designed around stealth technology. Other examples include the B-2, the B-21, F-22 Raptor, F-35 Lightning, and the Chengdu J-20, and the SU-7. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, while no aircraft is completely invisible to radar, stealth aircraft make it more difficult for conventional radar to detect or track effectively. Now, this would not look like what it does in the film, where it looks like a cloaking device from Star Trek. I also have something about I Spy, the show this was based on. It starred Robert Culp and Bill Cosby, who are both intelligence agents, as opposed to just one of them being intelligence agents. Traveling undercover as international tennis bums. So in the show, Kelly Robinson is played by Robert Culp, whereas Alex Scott is played by Bill Cosby, so they switched the races for that. And
Robinson still a boxer?
No, they're tennis players. Robinson is an amateur tennis player, and Scott is his trainer. Yeah. So, but it was notable for being one of the few
shows with spy craze
shows of the '60s that actually used international locations as opposed to just using stock footage.
I bet the actors must have liked that.
Yeah. So they ran for 3 seasons and had 82 episodes. I've never actually seen any of them. I just knew of it most because I knew that there was a movie that came out that this was based on. But for some reason, I knew that there were tennis players in the show, and I just assumed they were also tennis players in the movie, which they are not.
Nope.
All right. And that's what I've got for spy fact versus spy fiction.
Okay. So Kelly Robinson is boxing in the beginning of the movie. By the way, do you notice that he's like a middleweight?
I did not.
They mentioned that in the movie, which I think is ridiculous that he has such a big ego, because nobody cares about boxing with any weight except for heavyweight. So how can you call yourself like the greatest, the champion, if you're not a heavyweight?
I will counter that. Let's see. Hold on. I got to look up something quick.
Okay.
Manny Pacquiao. Okay. Manny Pacquiao has won championships in 4 different weight classes: flyweight, featherweight, super featherweight, and super lightweight. And people cared about him.
I guess also, people do care about
him. Yeah. So. All
right, there you go.
Manny Pacquiao.
Okay, so in the beginning, he's boxing some guy. And one of the commentators says, I can't read my handwriting, Lorette, I think is the name of the guy. He says, Lorette is on Queer Street.
Okay.
So I Googled what this means. Wikipedia says, it's a colloquial term referring to a person being in some difficulty, most commonly financial. Oh. It's often associated with Carey Street, where London's bankruptcy courts were once located.
Huh.
The term appears in 1811 in a dictionary of buckish slang, university wit, and pickpocket eloquence. It seems to be British. I don't know if the dude who said that was British. So anyway, the part where Kelly is feeding Alex Lines reminded me of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Okay, yeah.
Do you remember Cyrano de Bergerac?
You ever heard the story? I know of it. No. Yeah,
so apparently he's a real person.
Oh.
But he's also a play. So Wikipedia says it's a play written in 1897, and Cyrano is a cadet in the French army. He has many talents, but he has an obnoxiously long nose, which causes him to doubt himself.
Right.
He has love for his distant cousin, the beautiful intellectual Roxanne, but he believes his ugliness will bar him. And Roxanne loves the fair Christian de Neuvillette, who is too tongue-tied to romance her, so Cyrano writes love letters to Roxanne, pretending to be Christian. And right. If you want to find out what happens, go see it. Spoiler alert. But actually, the reason why I know this is from the Muppet Babies episode.
Let me guess, who plays Cyrano de Bergerac? It's Gonzo?
That's right. Wow. That's a deep cut from my childhood. And then finally, in Q, and then they use it again later in the movie, an exploding pager. So as everyone who's paying attention may remember, on September 17th, 2024, thousands of pagers reportedly distributed by Hezbollah to its operatives in Lebanon exploded simultaneously.
Oh, wow. I did not know about that.
Okay. Well, Christian's been raising children, so he has an excuse. But explosions resulted in at least 9 deaths and wounded almost 3,000 people. Jeez. Most of whom were Hezbollah members. No one knows who did it, wink, 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 but then it led to a brief war with Hezbollah in 2024, 2025.
See, that I did know, but I just didn't know about the pager part.
The pager part? Okay.
Yeah.
The attack has been nicknamed Operation Grim Beeper. And that is all I have for Spy Fact versus Fiction. All
right.
Favorite quotes.
All right, so next we have favorite quotes. Again, I have a lot.
Okay, let me do my trick, because I've only got 2.
Okay.
I've got, size matters, but in the spy world, it's reversed.
I don't remember that one. I like that one.
It's what Alex sees Carlos's gadgets, and his gadgets are all giant, whereas Carlos's are all tiny.
Aha, gotcha.
And this is also from Alex, where he says, this girl is special, you got to put her on a pedestal. And Kelly says, we don't got a pedestal, all we got is a cot in the back.
Very amusing. Yeah. All right, I'm going to hit you with a bunch, Christian.
All right, let's hear it.
Some of these made me laugh. Some of them made me ponder. One of them is George W. Bush. Kelly Robinson says, what you doing, Prez? And he says, kicking with Putin.
I missed that. I mean, I remember the part, but I missed that he says that.
Yeah, that was crazy. There's a part where the boss says, the stealth plane in the hands of evildoers.
Evil
can cause a lot of damage, which struck me as very strange. But then I remembered that's George W. Bush speak. Remember he used to say that? Evildoers? Yep. A line that made me laugh out loud was when they're interrogating Kelly. They say, what's the name of your contact? He says, I don't know. He got one of them white boy names like Alan or something. So that was, I will not try to do Eddie Murphy impressions, but
that's
he's great.
That's pretty good. All right.
When Kelly's pouring his heart out, and he talks about how his dad used to, like, beat him with a belt or something. And Alex says, parents just don't take the time anymore. See, come on, Christian. This movie has a lot of fun lines. It's even delivered by me, which to tell you something. When he's pulling the Cyrano de Bergerac and Alex is freaking out, Kelly says, Kelly Robinson's rep works. This is good shit. Now get back in there. And then I won't keep you for too much longer. We both love the part where they're like, oh no, Rachel is actually a double secret agent. It's actually pretty standard. We thought it was actually pretty standard. It was genius.
All right. I don't know about genius, but that's amusing.
I was funny. And then finally, my significant other really liked when he says to Alex, say no to Rachel. He says, no, say hell no. Hell no. Say hell no, biatch. Even though the biatch is very dated. That's part of why I like it. That's all my quotes.
All righty. Shall we get into our ratings? I'm very curious where you're going to go with this.
Ratings.
All right, so now it's time for our ratings on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis. 1 being even better than Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, and 1 being Avengers 1998 level bad. How would we rate I Spy? Christian, why don't you go first, since you've been going first this whole time?
Okay, all right. Yeah. This was bad.
Okay. God.
This was a struggle. Even though this was only like, 90 minutes or somewhere around there, it felt long. Especially with those long car chases that didn't know when to end. Unlike you, like, I enjoy Eddie Murphy, but I was just getting real fed up with Kelly, especially at the beginning.
With the shtick.
Yeah, with the shtick. Like, as you got longer into the movie, sure, I'm enjoying this, but I was not at the beginning. And it was predictable. The fact that early on that I called, oh, it's definitely Rachel's. And I will say that at least kind of excuses her acting as I'm so clueless up because she's trying to lure him in to, you know, play a role.
Yeah, she knows exactly what she's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and exactly what he feels about her. So, I don't know. It was, I had to look back at movies from this era that how I rated them. I enjoy it more or less than that movie?
All right. Almost.
Like, main comparison being The Tuxedo.
That's a good question, because I liked The Tuxedo.
I enjoyed The Tuxedo, but it was bad. And we both gave it a 3. And I can't rate this higher than The Tuxedo, because I still enjoyed parts of The Tuxedo more than I enjoyed here, mainly because we had Jackie Chan doing Jackie Chan things. So I have to give it a 2.
Harsh.
Yeah.
Harsh, but fair. Mm-hmm. Okay. I will go. I like this movie. I like it. I don't care. Is great. I like the characters. Yeah, it's not a good movie. I would never say it's good. I would never recommend it. I love how delightfully dated it is. George W. Bush, evildoers. Yeah, the chase was long, but it didn't really bother me. Yeah, there was a lot of funny lines. I was laughing a lot. And when you bring up The Tuxedo, now I have to compare them. I remember there were bits of The Tuxedo that I liked, but the movie as a whole, not so much. In this case, the movie as a whole, I did like bits, not so much. That being said, I still have to put my brain over my heart, and I will give it a 5 out of 10, which is generous.
It is very generous.
Yes.
You know what else?
I'm judging it on a curve.
Oh, man, that's quite the curve. Mm-hmm. That is higher than Spy Kids Armageddon. Wait, which one was Spy Kids? That was the newest one.
Yes. I definitely liked it more than Spy Kids Armageddon. Absolutely.
I don't even remember that one. Higher than Wind Talkers.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Whatever, I'm biased. It's like Will Smith. I just love Eddie Murphy. I just think he's great.
All right, that's interesting. All right, well, thank you all for listening, and for our Spy-Fi fans on the West Coast, especially in the LA area. So I know we've talked about how me and another Bond fan out here on the East Coast started a James Bond fan club called Capital Royale. Now, we have a sibling club over in LA called To Live and Let Die in LA, and there are a great bunch of people out there. I haven't been able to get out to one of their events yet, but I would like to at some point. But they are starting to have some regular Bond screenings in partnership with a theater called the Culver Theater, and there'll be sort of bi-monthly regular screenings. The first one, which will be on March 25th, which will be probably after this episode comes out. The next one being showing The Living Daylights on May 27th. Now, if you check out the Culver Theater on their socials or follow To Live and Let Die in LA on their Instagram, you can get more info about that there.
Great. Good stuff. Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us here on the Spy-Fi Guys. You can find us on social media at the Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Instagram, and our merch store at redbubble.com, as well as also on YouTube. Until next time, I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And we are the Spy-Fi Guys, signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Spy-Fi Guys. If you enjoyed our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. The theme song from this podcast is Mistake the Getaway by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Films, books, and television shows reviewed by our podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
This is a personal podcast. Any views, statements, or opinions expressed in this podcast are personal and belong solely to the participants. They do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the participants may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. Any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.
You can find our podcast on social media at The Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, and Instagram.